For the first time in 20 years, evidence to prove the true value of seafood to the Cornish economy exists. A report commissioned by the Cornish Fish Producers Organisation has revealed seafood is four times more important to Cornwall's economy than to the UK's. The Cornish seafood sector contributes £174 million to the county's total gross value added and employs around 8,000 people. Hello, it's Charlotte here. I work for the Cornish Fish Producers Organisation, and you're listening to the Fathom podcast.
Fishing goes right through the social fabric, the cultural history of Cornwall.
Keeps you alive, keeps you on your toes as well.
I like feeding people. You know, I'm catching some of the finest seafood in the world.
You look at the economics, very, very important. A lot of jobs are involved.
So many people's lives are dependent on it.
In this episode, I'll be hosting our CEO, Chris Ranford, economist and co-author of the report, Jim Plunkett Cole, and Ed Hind-Ozan from DEFRA, as they break down the key findings of the report and what that means for the future of the seafood sector here. So Chris, when did you first establish the need for this research?
Yeah, thanks Charlotte. So I guess from a CFPO point of view, back in 2021, we commissioned a new fishing strategy for Cornwall. It had been 20 years since we'd done that previously. That's not to say there was a big gap and nothing happening, but with Brexit and COVID in quick succession of one another or sort of intertwined with one another, it really felt like it was a sensible moment really to revisit where are we going for the next 5, 10, 15 years as an industry. This is when I actually just introduced myself to the PO, so it was quite an interesting time. So we've done that working with the industry, the catching sector, processing sector, harbour masters, other people in and around and interested in the industry, which really set this new vision or new way that we're going to work and actually take the industry forward. There's four pillars that came out the back of that, four strategic objectives. The first one being science and sustainability. How do we enhance our routes to market? Recruiting and retaining people working in the supply chain, not just at sea, but right through the seafood supply chain. And a focus on how do we actually develop and enhance our ports? How do we modernize our ports to meet the needs of the industry in the future? So through the PO, we started to action lots of pilot projects, lots of small projects to start to take that forward, start to turn that into reality. I suppose we learned a lot in the last couple of years doing that. And now we realize actually we need to get some major investment in to start to scale up these projects. But before we'd done that, we felt there was a real need to have this socioeconomic evidence, this piece of research to really have something to underpin where we go strategically. On the back of that, I had a conversation with Hazel Curtis, who is a co-author of this report, and started to shape that work up. What does this type of research look like? How do we do it? How do we collect this type of data? So there was quite a process there. And working closely with Hazel, we set up an advisory group, which included people from DEFRA, from Seafish, from Cornwall Council. So we made sure what we were doing was correct. We weren't missing anything and we weren't duplicating anything. Jim and Hazel worked as a team with me in the background, just overseeing and understanding that we were going in the right direction.
How useful do you think this research will be when it comes to asking for that investment?
There's certainly a lack of data out there that actually represents fishing and the seafood sector from a social economic point of view. We know and feel these things when we're in and around harbours, in and around the county, working on the quayside. We know there's that link between fishing and tourism and hospitality, but we didn't have anything to actually say that or support that. Now we know how important the fishing industry and the seafood sector is, either from a funding point of view or a decision-making point of view. We've got something credible that actually supports our requests to get that support into the industry.
One of the standout figures from this research for me was Cornwall's seafood sector is responsible for about 174 million of Cornwall's total GVA. Jim, how did you work that out and how does that stack up in comparison to other sectors here in Cornwall?
So we worked out through looking at each of the various subcomponents of the overall seafood sector. GVA is a term that economists use to describe the output of a particular industry or sector, and that's the value, basically, of everything that it produces, less the purchases of the supplies that it takes to produce those. And so it's regarded as the truest value, if you like, of output of a particular industry. And we found that for Cornwall, the seafood sector was responsible for about 170 £4 million worth of GVA per annum. And that's Cornwall's GVA itself is approaching £12 billion of GVA altogether. And if you calculate what seafood is as a percentage of that overall Cornwall total, it's about 1.5% of all Cornwall's GVA. In general, any local subsector which accounts for over 1% of an area's entire output is generally regarded as being highly, highly significant. If you look at how that's reflected in jobs in seafood, that's even more impressive. What we found that as well as £174 million per annum of GVA, there are about 8,000 people who are engaged in Cornwall seafood sector, and that is nearly 3% of all jobs in Cornwall. You've got an origin industry, the fishing industry, the marine fishing industry. That probably got about 500 to 600 people that are engaged in that endeavour, that activity that takes place at sea is ultimately responsible for a further approaching sort of 7,500 jobs across the rest of Cornwall in those other activities through from processing to seafood food service. And a further interesting finding statistic that came out of that analysis was that when you look at the seafood sector for the whole of the Southwest, about 1/4 of it is based in Cornwall.
Yeah, there's some really great results in there. So before we bring Ed in to discuss it with us, I think I'd be amiss, Jim, if I didn't ask you what your takeaway was when you finalised this report.
Really, as well as the 1-to-15 ratio, it was that the seafood sector was 4 times more important in Cornwall than it was across the rest of the UK. And that's something that economists call a location quotient. When you deal with location quotients, again, anything above one means that you have a specialism in a particular sector. Anything approaching 4 means that you have a sort of almost like hegemony superiority in a particular sector. I guess the question is why does that exist in Cornwall? And does it exist elsewhere across the UK to the same degree that it exists in Cornwall? And I think the findings were that it doesn't. And the reason why it doesn't is because whilst you've got this seafood sector, that seafood sector is so important, 8,000 jobs, £174 million of GVA per annum. And it's because of the presence of Cornwall's other key sectors in hospitality and tourism, the production and the consumption of fresh produce side by side with one another. There are very few parts of the UK where fishing and hospitality and tourism exist to the degree that they exist in Cornwall. It's something that we termed, I think, the Holy Trinity. And there are no other parts of the UK where seafood and hospitality and tourism are as important in Cornwall. And we found other parts of the country which was certainly very strong in terms of the production of seafood and the processing and perhaps the wholesaling of seafood. And those are parts of the UK, including Aberdeenshire, Highland and Northeast Lincolnshire. But in terms of those where the consumption of seafood also took place to the degree that it does in Cornwall, there was nowhere else amongst the 220 smaller local areas of the UK that you can break it up into, Cornwall came out as the number one area for the production and consumption of seafood. And I think what that meant was you can describe Cornwall as the seafood flagship economy of the UK.
I mean, that's pretty impressive. I think that's a pretty brilliant statement. Coming from Cornwall, I know that. Everybody in the industry knows that. But I guess now it's great to have that recognition.
Yeah, I've worked in economic development for 25 years. And we very rarely come across sort of sectors which have that degree of interrelationship at the local level. It's a very unique thing.
That's really interesting, Jim. Thank you. So, Chris, when you unveiled this to key players in local and central government, what was the feedback?
Yeah, so I think a really important part of this actual process was to make sure the research or the evidence actually lands with the right people. So we took the opportunity to host a launch event very recently, right at the start of January this year. And then from there, I invited people from DEFRA, from the MMO, from Cornwall Council, MPs. So we had a really great turnout, a really positive reception to that event and the opportunity to talk and walk people through what we found between myself, Hazel and Jim. really gave us a chance to sort of shine a light on how important the fishing and seafood sector is to Cornwall. It allowed us to just lay the foundations for where we want to go next. So where we're actually focusing on using this research for either local or national decision making. And that could range from a whole host of different issues at the moment, whether that's just reflecting in recent weeks, months, end of year negotiations, where there you have data limited issues that result in massive changes to fisheries management, which have massive consequences for Cornish fishing businesses, which, as we now know, for every one person going to sea in Cornwall fishing, there's 15 jobs across the seafood supply chain. That evidence never existed before. So presenting it in that way to make sure we're making sensible, balanced fisheries management decisions and actually start to take this piece of research with the strategy to government to say, look, I don't think many areas are as organized as the Southwest or as Cornwall at the moment in terms of what we've got. We've got a strategy. We've got clear objectives of where we're going as an industry. And we've now got this really significant, unique piece of research that shows we have to invest in the industry down here. If there's that many jobs on the back of someone going to sea, well, we better make sure we've got a really well-organized training program and way of supporting people to climb the ladder in the industry. Without people going to sea, obviously, we're going to lose a lot of jobs on land. So how do we sustain that workforce, encourage people to come in, and then really support those that are already in there? I think I said earlier on, we have piloted some of these projects already and had some great success. So it's looking for that investment to scale it up. We don't want to be submitting 50 individual small grant projects for £5,000 here, £10,000 there. What would be great is something that's sector-wide that sets us up for the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years.
Ed, you were on the advisory group. What do you think of the results of this research?
Well, I think I just wanted to first start by saying, like, thank you for inviting me to the advisory group. It's really good to be involved with these projects and it's good to collaborate. And I guess it's an example of co-management in practice. But to go back to your question, yeah, it's like really, it's really great to see the results because obviously we've been working on this for a while to see the final report, to see some really interesting results, probably some results we expected, but also some results we didn't expect. And from my perspective, I also loved seeing the infographic that you produced to accompany the report. I've already been enjoying sharing that infographic around with colleagues. It's been a good way to bring people into the report and then actually talk to them about the, you know, the more detailed results.
Yeah, thank you. And for our listeners, we'll be putting that infographic in our show notes as well, so you can also access that online. So, Ed, where does this research fit into the UK Fisheries Act?
Obviously, you know, there's 8 objectives within the Fisheries Act, and I think 2 of those are really relevant for this research. So there's the sustainability objective, and then there's the national interest objective. As part of both those objectives in the Fisheries Act, it sets out that there's the scope to consider social and economic benefits. And then I think you probably, you know, you've seen in the last few years with the publication of the Joint Fisheries Statement, how that reliance, you know, well, how that importance of looking at social and economic benefits has been fleshed out a bit. So for instance, you know, it sets out in the Joint Fisheries Statement that evidence is needed to ensure, yeah, environmental, but also social and economic balance. And, you know, we can't do that without evidence. We can't do that without data. We can't do that without reports like this. I mean, it also sets out in the Joint Fisheries Statement that the cultural aspect of fisheries is important, which maybe is something which has been historically a little bit overlooked. So when it talks about the cultural aspect, it goes into the fact that, you know, it's important to look at communities. And obviously, this report is really, you know, centered on Cornwall and Cornwall's fishing communities and also livelihoods of peoples in those communities. So I think the research really covers those issues in detail. I think it's also important to note from our perspective at DEFRA that, yes, within the Joint Fisheries Statement, we set out that, you know, we have a responsibility for collecting and gathering some of this social economic data, but it's also outlined in the Joint Fisheries Statement that we also expect data to come from industry in the future, you know, either working with government or industry working independently. You know, the fact that there's the seafood sector and fishing industry in Cornwall who's producing reports like this is exactly what is expected and what is hoped for. I can go a little bit more into some of the detail in the, you know, in the JFS and Fisheries Act as well to show how, once you've produced this research, how it can be used as well. It's like we talk a lot about fisheries management plans at the moment, but it's set out in the Joint Fisheries Statement that the scope for fisheries management plans can be extended to social and economic interests. So yes, fisheries management plans over the long term are designed to ensure environmental sustainability, but there's that recognition that environmental sustainability comes alongside economic and social sustainability. So having economic and social objectives in those plans is seen as important to that success. And actually, indeed, if you look at a lot of case studies out there and a lot of examples from around the world, we actually know for the most part that environmental sustainability, you don't really get that unless you have social and economic sustainability as well. Those three things are really symbiotic, I guess.
That's really encouraging to hear, Ed, actually, how this all plugs in. I think we've been beavering away quietly, but sort of keeping our eye on the Fisheries Act and Joint Fisheries Statement and understanding where it plugs in. And obviously having yourself on the advisory group with others has made sure what we've designed hopefully then just starts to plug in, whether it's a fisheries management plan or other fisheries policy issues. And I guess the two reasons we've done this, one, actually getting more involved in decision making, having something credible that can help make decisions. But the second one is all around attracting investment funding into the industry. And that could then spin off into multiple different ways. And I think going back to fisheries management plans, we know there's lots of data gaps in there, whether that's environmental data gaps or actually getting better handle on what the fishery is we're trying to manage. What do we do next, I suppose, as the CFPO, as the industry? How do we take this research and engage with DEFRA, make sure where we're designing or starting to implement fisheries management plans? Yeah, have we done our job by getting you in on the advisory group and then already waving a flag saying, come and look at this research?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's one of the advantages of being on the advisory group. It's not our job to tell you how to do research and what to do, but it is. Being on the advisory group allows us to help you shape the research and hopefully help us shape the research a bit so it is as relevant as possible to policymaking or management or science. I guess that is step one. I mean, I think I would emphasize podcasts like this, you know, other media coverage are also a really important thing to do. This podcast is widely listened to at DEFRA and I'm sure beyond. And I think you'll have seen like this year, we're really encouraging people to engage. There's opportunities to input the findings from this report in lots of different avenues. Obviously, we run a lot of consultations and calls for evidence. Those are opportunities to, you know, say, actually, we got this report. It shows this. You can mention that report in the consultation. You know, we're aware of it already, but always emphasizing that again is important. And going along to regional fishing groups is another way to engage, and bringing up this report in forums like that is, you know, if you're sitting on good, strong evidence, it's always appreciated when you bring that forwards and remind us of it as well. You know, like it is there, it is part of our evidence base now, but don't let us forget. And I think, like, we've already talked about it a bit, you know, we are moving to this era of more participation from fishery stakeholders and the fishing industry in management and science, which I think often we're calling co-management. So getting involved in fisheries management plans, as you said, there's a lot of evidence gaps to deliver fisheries management plans. Like, some of the evidence gaps can definitely be filled by the findings in this report. And so, you know, do go along to FMP meetings or other FMP engagement events, whether it be quayside visits or whatever, to, you know, get these findings across there. But you are already having impact. There's a group of analysts within government at DEFRA and CFISH and CFAS and the MMO and other agencies, you know, who are already reading this report and talking to our policymaking colleagues about the findings in the report to make sure they're aware of them and how they can use them. And yeah, and some of that's getting through to ministers as well. So
yeah, that's good. It's good to know it's already getting traction. I think that's the purpose of designing it with yourself and others and making sure that it's going to actually just go straight in and get to work on our behalf. But I guess that's, again, positive. It's going to go through and fill some of those data gaps in fisheries management plans. I'll put my sort of quayside head on for a second and where we're facing some pretty challenging situations at the moment, certainly for some of the inshore boats. They'll want to see this get to work straight away. So I wonder, outside of fisheries management plans, does this carry weight in terms of more immediate decisions that are being made that are obviously causing industry quite, very tricky situations? Is it something we can mobilize or present to parts of DEFRA just to really raise the alarm on actually having issues about the catching sector or people going to sea? That sort of knock-on effect right across the supply chain is pretty significant. So how do we use it in a more short-term action as well?
It's been really important for you to get in touch with this, and it's great to be on the podcast as well, as I'm an analyst within government rather than I'm someone who specifically designs policy. I support policymakers in designing the policy they do, and they work on with ministers. And getting it to us, the group of people in government whose job it is to look at data out there and make sure that gets into policymaking as quickly as possible, you know, rest assured we're putting that forward wherever it's relevant. So you can be assured it is having that impact in the short term. If you don't think that's happening, do let us know. But, you know, we'll also try and feed back, you know, where we're using the evidence. We've done a number of pieces of work ourselves over the last few years where we've talked to the fishing industry and wider seafood sector stakeholders about what they want to do in terms of participating more in fisheries management and science going forward. And like one of the recurring messages we get back is, yeah, we want to be listened to, but, you know, we also want to be heard. We also want to know, you know, what we say to you is making a difference or is being onboarded. So we know it's important for us to get back to people wherever possible. The other place it can be used immediately in a kind of more practical sense is we evaluate a lot of our policy and our management making within government now. So you'll probably have seen some of these evaluations going on. Those evaluations are really designed to work alongside the policy delivery in real time so that we can improve policy making or delivery of management of science as it's happening, not just after the fact. So for instance, you know, what's one of the areas where this research is relevant under the Fisheries Act? In the Fisheries Act, it sets out that there can be financial assistance to, you know, help with social and economic benefits in the seafood sector. And you've seen some of that delivered through, for instance, the support provided through the Fisheries and Seafood Scheme. We are evaluating the Fisheries and Seafood Scheme to make sure it works as we've intended, but also works for industry. So as part of that evaluation, you know, we get in touch with all the grantees who've received funding under that scheme to see whether that funding has been delivered in the way they want, but also how they've used it. So, you know, if you are contacted by someone that we've contracted to do evaluation research, do talk to them. Talking to those people who are working on evaluations for us means that your thinking, your viewpoints and your data will get to us as quickly as possible and be integrated as quickly as possible. So that's another way to get engaged. If we come to you, do talk to us. I know sometimes there's a lot of burden on the fishing industry to talk to us, and probably sometimes people feel overburdened, but talking to research teams involved in evaluation really is worth the time.
Yeah, that makes total sense, Ed. Thanks, I appreciate that. And yeah, of course, we make sure we engage on consultations and yeah, feeding back to evaluate policy. We really welcome the opportunity to do that. We're all in on co-management, so yeah.
Again, to emphasize, it's really good to see more research like this being done because that really helps us. As I said, my team looks at the social evidence base for fisheries policy and checking fisheries are socially sustainable. I've got economist colleagues looking at, you know, economic sustainability and making sure that, you know, we're working on realizing social and economic benefits.
We're just definitely in that sort of evidence-based world, Ed. I'm picking up that message from you. The more we engage with providing evidence ourselves, and not just waiting for things to be actioned from government, is a benefit and is going to help accelerate things and get sensible management in place. So we'll continue in that space.
Fathom was brought to you by the Cornish Fish Producers Organisation with support from Seafarers UK.